CliffCentral.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Something Just Like This from Coldplay and the Chainsmokers, number 7 this week at the Billboard Hot 100. Good morning. It's Monday, and there's lots of stuff to talk about, and there's lots going on, and there's plenty we need to catch up on. So we'll get to some news in a moment or two. We'll also check in with Rich Mulholland in the reality check later. We'll find out who's wearing black today. Apparently today's Black Monday. Did you hear about this?
Yeah. A lot of WhatsApp groups have been very active over the weekend.
I'm tired of it. I got it from like 400 people. All right, so today's Black Monday, but then Friday's the day we're meant to be protesting and everybody's going to shut down, which will be really irritating because then the highways will be a mess and you won't be able to do anything. And so what's the what are we meant to – someone tell us what to do. We don't know who the leader is. Is there someone who's the leader of all this stuff?
I would love to know who is the Supreme Lord for this very thing that you speak about, Gareth, because – part of what it reads in this notification is that it's not because of the DA or any political party, but because of South Africa. So it sounds to me like an individual or a group of individuals have taken it upon themselves to try and kickstart this whole thing. So on Friday, the 7th of April, this is what they want. Do not go to work or to school or anything unless you're taking to the streets in protest.
Okay.
On Friday, the 7th of April, South Africans need to take to the streets in masses, wherever you are, with signs of protest to make our collective voice heard. Block highways. Stand with your communities, go to political houses, go to prayer meetings, arrange your own marches, do whatever you can to make your voice heard. I will no longer be supporting corruption and the evil that has plagued our beautiful country. I will be joining a nationwide shutdown. Who are you, I? We'd love to know who's
in charge here. Who came up with this idea?
Just tell us.
Because it could just be an I who is a kid in school and has a test on Friday and didn't call me very cynical, pessimistic, whatever it is.
You are a cynical, pessimistic person.
And then they just spread it around on WhatsApp. No, now it's caught fire and they're like, thank you, off geography exam.
Right. So listen, just for starters, we will be doing the show on Friday. I don't care about whether or not there's a protest going on, all right?
I imagine there are a lot of employers, Gareth, who are going to be saying the exact same thing that you just said.
So if you do want to protest, you can do it in your spare time.
During your lunch break.
Yes, during your lunch break, go outside, doi doi. You can wear black, you can hold up a sign that with a middle finger to the president, whatever you want. But do it in your spare time, all right? The rest of us have shit to do. And don't block the highways, please. It's very... That's stupid. Because if you block the highways, you're stuck on the highway, idiot. What are you going to do there?
What if it is this, though, guys? For so long, we've been going, oh, this guy. And now it's too late. The nuclear deal's been signed. This country's in a whole pile of shit, all because we got this theory, like, you know what? Let's not protest that much. Let's just do a little bit.
No. Look, don't get me wrong. Your heart's in the right place if you want to protest. There are ways to do it. Don't disrupt the whole country.
But what if nothing's going to happen unless people actually really do take a stand towards shit? I'm not saying this is the right thing, and I'm also not for highway blocking because I think that's just dangerous.
I just don't like mobs. I don't like crowds.
There is a mob in charge of this country already, and they own everything. So we can all just sit here and do the decent thing and not disrupt society because we don't want traffic and someone's precious job. But then what? So then Showerhead's still laughing at us because it's like, I knew they wouldn't have the conviction to go against us.
Well, first of all, that nuclear deal thing, it seems to be fake news.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. You got to put two and two together here. We've seen enough
to suggest this thing's
going on.
That story is fake news. So if there is going to be something, we'll know a little bit more about it. Trust me.
But I saw a story on Times Live saying Melissa Gugaba said the deal is going to go through for the nuclear. It's just not going to be reckless. That's the story that's going out. So.
Times Live, I don't know.
Fake news as well.
They've also had their moments of where their credibility was tested or questioned.
Let me tell you, Times Live, News 24, I don't trust any of them anymore. And I certainly don't trust Facebook. That much I know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
What?
If you get you get your news from Facebook or from Twitter, you are going to be uninformed.
We get our news from Twitter. No, what do you mean?
You can't. It's not verified. It's not true.
I just see where the masses are going. That's the only time I follow a mob or a mass.
Yeah, okay.
Many people are there.
I always wait for Fakey Mentor to say something. When she says stuff, I believe.
Fakey Mentor.
Well, Praveen said at the Katrada Memorial Service on Saturday, that Fakey Mentor's story about someone getting a message from a Russian, that's why he and Kabisa Jonas were summoned back. He says that's bullshit. He said that is a lie. So I do you believe Praveen?
He's been way too diplomatic here. I listened to an interview he had on 702 on Friday night, and he was just so nice. So he's asked the question, so do you think the Treasury is in good hands? And he's like, well, you know, you can only have faith in the people to do a job, blah, 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 etc.
See, for me, he shed a tear at the Cathrada Memorial, so I'm on his team.
Is that all it took, Sia?
I'm telling you.
Display of emotion.
I'm telling you, and there are so many other people who are like me. We are the ones who just fall for politicians kissing babies.
Right.
Okay, so then this is what we were hopping on about for most of last week, right? We were saying something needs to change. What is it that we need to do?
Mm.
Now there's this proposal of this march, but we're finding reasons to not do it. So what then do we want? What do we want? Because now I can already hear it, and I've been hearing it. People saying, oh, yeah, sure, like my boss is going to understand me taking the day off to go on some march, you know?
And what is it going to accomplish anyway?
So what's going to happen? What's going to happen at school? Because they're actually saying kids mustn't go to school that day either.
Maybe some bosses will want to join this.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, maybe Ben is right. Maybe this is the tipping point that people are like, I'm putting everything down and I'm joining the march.
Yeah, I mean, you can wear the pros and cons of this. Maybe this is a catalyst of how we take our disagreements and grievances to the next level.
Here's my suggestion: we can protest on Friday. And everybody can get the day off, but then we have to do a public holiday somewhere here in
Oh. You see, you want your own conditions. I mean,
I just don't want us to stop producing for an entire day. I mean, I do think that's going to affect us rather badly.
April is already such a mess. April is basically a write-off. Just think of the number of days that people are going to take off anyway because of all the public holidays that are in weird times of the week.
You're not wrong.
It's really going to be a mess.
Yeah,
I get it on paper that we're trying, they're aiming for a disruption, like a whole country on board.
Yeah.
But folks, I just feel like a lot of us are just keyboard warriors. A lot of people feel like they're doing something by, you know, sharing this on their own platforms, but they're not going to do anything.
But this is the chance, yeah, because if that's the attitude, then things will always stay the same.
Right now, do you really think the country will go on pause on Friday?
Well, yeah.
I'd love to be wrong, but I really don't see it happening.
All right, well, let's see. Let's see by show of hands. I mean, who would join this? I mean, this morning, for example, only Lucas and Sia are wearing black.
Well, I do a black Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Yeah, the black is your thing.
And listen, you know, we're still talking about Black Monday, and some of the best tweets I saw was someone saying, oh, so I'm not getting discounts today? Meaning they thought it was like a Black Friday situation.
Yeah. Social media joking.
My
guys,
goodness.
There is nothing comfortable about being revolutionary or anything like this. You know, disrupting oppressive regimes were never easy throughout history. And this is unfortunately what it is. It's an oppressive regime. We can't sugarcoat this anymore.
Well,
capture is a bitch, and it's happening, and it's here.
That's exactly right. So then when you talk about, but don't block the highways, it's like, okay, so you want to have your cake and eat it too. Yeah. I mean, you want all of it to be convenient and to not make you uncomfortable. But the exact point is that it is uncomfortable.
Like, I would prefer a Game of Thrones scenario. We go into a place and it's just killing. But that's just me. I'm a bit rash.
Well, you're a bit sadistic, not rash.
Like, I mean, this is how you say change things properly, because we can always go through and want the speaker to have this no confidence motion brought up. The ANC have a protocol for this. They all know what to do. It's like they just the alarm bell goes and they'll just go back to type.
I don't know. And I think we're also dealing with the same types of people who when elections do come around and this is your opportunity to make a change and make a voice heard, these are the same types of people who will go, oh, well, my one vote won't make a difference. And these are the same people who won't even register to vote.
So decide for you, Sia. What are you going to do? Are you part of this?
No.
You're not. You're out. Okay, how about you?
Not that I'm not part of it. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Let's be clear. Sia supports state capture.
No. No. All right, you know what? I will fully support 400%, but I'm telling you nothing's going to happen on Friday.
Okay, so you still like state capture.
400% means you're going to go to four different marches.
No.
Is that right?
Okay, 100%. 100.00%.
You're going to go to a march.
I'm all for the message and the idea behind it. But
where are we marching?
I don't know.
There's not a lot of. Well, okay.
Where are we marching? Are we going to get a pee break? Will there be water supply?
Do I need to bring my own sunscreen? Again, with you want to be comfortable.
Not about you, Sia. It's about your children's children.
I mean, it doesn't say that we're marching to a specific endpoint. It just says march.
As in, we must take control of our own situation.
Let's just have a bit of patience here.
Okay.
Don't poo-poo something because the organization's not so great just yet.
All right.
Can we entrust you with taking part of our.
Okay, unfortunately, I'm not here on Friday.
You're not even here.
I'm driving down to the Cape. So
but you know what? This is the reality of the situation. Mm. So I am not going to march on Friday because guess what? My boss at the other place of employment where I work is not going to hear it. And then what? Ben has commitments. So and so, like, some doctor already has like 3 C-sections lined up on Friday. Is he now going to cancel them because he has to go in March?
Within reason, okay. I mean, obviously within reason here.
Sorry, let me just knock on my manager's door. Hi, Gary.
Hey, Sia, what's up?
Just have something quick to run past you. May I take Friday off? I need to make a true change in my country, and I'd like to march. I'd like to, band with my prayer groups.
You can be here and do the show, and then you can go and march. Thanks.
So there you go. Nine onwards.
There you go.
Okay. From march. 9 onwards, I'll march.
No one wakes up to march at 6 a.m.
Exactly, Sia. Come on. Stop making this difficult. See, within reason, just use your head.
And where are you going to march, Sia? Rivonia Road?
I will march on Rivonia Road. And then I'll put stuff at the Krispy Kreme in Sandton.
Nice. See, there we go. Man with a plan. That's what South Africans need.
Let's do this, but let's do it in a creative way. I think we've got to come up with a Cliff Central campaign around this. So we've got to make our own billboards. We've got to find a place where we can protest. Mm-hmm. And maybe we throw a little roadside party.
Exactly. It's all just so you do something. Everyone's got to do something.
All right, let's do it.
Because then there's a domino effect of more things being done. Because this isn't going to be like, okay, cool, we all put an effort on Friday, he's now resigned.
All right, let's move on. What else have we got?
He's a cancerous mollusk. It will take more than just one day, but at least one day is a start.
Why are you driving to the Cape? You're going to get there on Sunday. What's wrong with you?
I'm doing a favor for someone who needs a car down there. I'm driving said car down there.
How long is that drive? Joburg to Cape Town?
Years.
Yo. You're going to get there on Sunday.
So basically, Thursday morning, I'm driving from here to Bloemfontein Golf Course. I'm playing Bloemfontein Golf Course.
And that already is a long drive.
And then I'm staying at an Airbnb for the first time in my life, which is going to be very interesting. And then I'm going from Bloem to Riebeek West to go spend time with my mother. I haven't seen in a while. And then it's Daniel and I's anniversary, 4-year anniversary on Saturday. And then Sunday I come back.
All right.
You fly back on Sunday.
Fly back Sunday.
Sure.
See, I thought I was a brother of the year. Now you're the friend of the year for driving that far. Anybody got time for that?
No, it could be quite exciting doing a road trip like that, I think. You know, you'll see things.
Did you not hear? I'm playing golf in there. It's Masters weekend.
That's the only thing that's like...
All right. Well, Ranjini's written an interesting article on the Daily Maverick. I'm not going to spoil it for you. You're going to have to read it yourself. But she says, what led to Zuma opting for the group cull rather than acting in his fixation with Gordhan and Jonas? It had much to do with fallout among the ANC's top 6 officials, which was behind the scenes on Monday, but then erupted into the public sphere by the weekend. It's now common knowledge that Zuma revealed at 2 meetings at ANC headquarters on Monday that he intended to fire Gordhan and Jonas and appoint Brian Molefe as finance minister. Zuma conveyed that there was a breakdown of trust between him and Gordhan and that their relationship had become untenable. At the first meeting of bilateral with the South African Communist Party, he was roundly challenged on his intentions. At a second meeting of the ANC's top 6, Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa Secretary General Gwede Mantashe and Treasurer General Zweli Mkhize opposed the firing of the minister and deputy minister on the basis of a bogus intelligence report that Zuma told them about. They also would not accept the appointment of Brian Molefe into the finance portfolio and advised the president that he could not axe Gordon and Jonas and retain a cohort of underperformers in the cabinet. Zuma undertook to think over the matter and come back to the officials with a decision. The understanding was that would take place this Monday. But then a series of things unfolded.
Oh, I know, a Russian phone call.
Some details of the SACP meeting and the officials' meeting were leaked. The Gupta-owned television station ANN7 appeared to be a major beneficiary of the leaked information. On Thursday, the SACP had a media briefing to publicly confirm they were told by the president about his intention to fire the finance minister. SACP Second Deputy General Secretary Salim Mapaila said they were doing so because information was leaked from the meeting to create the impression that they had consented to the purge in the finance ministry. City Press reported Zuma was deeply hurt that everything he had told the officials on Monday found its way to the media. The report quoted a close Zuma confidant as saying the president felt betrayed that they had leaked the information. This makes sense in the way that Zuma flipped his position from Monday to Thursday. When he suddenly summoned the officials to his Pretoria home, he was no longer in a consulting mood. Mantashe, Ramaphosa and Mkhize suggested that they were presented with a list of ministers and deputy ministers who were to be axed, appointed and shuffled around. And they've made it clear publicly that despite their opposition, Zuma was determined to fire Gordon and Jonas on the basis of a dubious intelligence report. So there's quite a lot of info in here.
Mm.
And really, Ranjeni knows people. So she's got sources inside the ANC who are clearly filling her in on what's really going on. Because I heard her at the press conference yesterday with Bala Gambete asking a few questions. She really wanted an answer to a specific question. She finishes the article by saying this is now high-stakes politics. With deep divisions at every level of the ANC, the situation is unstable and difficult to predict. Zuma has played his cards by executing the reshuffle. Now he must fight to survive, and that fight can take various forms in the ANC and using the institutions of state. His opponents across the political spectrum and civil society need to think hard and smart about strategies to continue to isolate him from his backers and weaken his base. When ultimately what counts is whether they can cut short Zuma's presidency and rescue the state from further capture and looting. This will not be an easy battle to win, but South Africa's week of hell was also not a walk in the park for Zuma. He is also battered and bruised. The final death blow might not happen quickly, but it needs to be decisive. Therefore, the execution needs to be meticulous.
Now, there is also the matter of trying to evade those 780-something charges against him, right? So when is that whole show going to begin? I'm sure there are groups of individuals waiting in the wings, waiting to pounce on the president as soon as the opportunity arises.
Oh, yeah.
To go after
so many enemies.
Yeah. I mean, can't that start now? Are they waiting for him to not be president anymore and then they'll go after him? How does it work?
Don't know. I don't know the answer. What do I know?
I mean, remember when...
But he is in trouble. And listen, see, the problem is once someone is weak, the enemies come out of the woodwork and pile on.
Do you remember when Gerry Nel announced that he was joining AfriForum?
Yeah.
And one of the questions that they asked him was, so, are you preparing like a massive case against the president? And he did not want to answer that question.
Of course he is. Of course he is.
When does all of that happen?
I suppose it's best that it happens once he's not president anymore.
Yeah.
So maybe that's when the axe will fall. Who knows? Justin says, I think the best way for government to feel the pressure is for corporates to get involved. As a start, telling government that they should withhold paying over employee tax and company tax until a change is made. Well, that would be good because they can't arrest a company.
But, you know, there's all this money that SARS aren't paying out. We spoke about this last week. There's no reason to march. Where the hell's our tax rebates?
Mess with my money.
Ashley says, I'm so conflicted about this. I think we need to do something, but I don't think it will help for us to just take to the streets. Also, I picture the small business I work at here. If we all take the day off, the only people that will suffer will be us. Politicians won't care. I'm so conflicted.
I hear you, Ashley. I'm with you there.
By the way, she also says Airbnb is amazing. You'll never look back, Ben. Uber for sleeping. Mm. I tried it this year.
I'm pretty excited. The place looks great.
Awesome. All right. There we go.
Fantastic reviews.
All right. Excellent. Who knows? Huh. We're going to find out from Ben when he gets back from his weekend.
I know. We'll chat throughout Thursday and Friday.
All right. We'll take your calls on Skype. You can call us a Cliff Central, one word. Listen, the other big story of the weekend was...
Depends.
Oh, Ben, do you want to guess first?
Just, come on.
I'm still thinking.
Wait, where are we? What are we thinking?
Is it politics? Is it
come on, you
celebrities?
Guys,
is it
big story this weekend?
Yeah, come on.
You mean outside of the whole Zuma thing?
Absolutely.
Don't ask the guy who promised and passed out.
Oh, legalization of weed!
Now, remember we spoke to the Dacha couple not so long ago, and we like to check in with them every now and then. The Western Cape High Court made a very important finding on Friday, and Jules from the Dacha couple is on the line. How are you, Jules?
Morning. You guys sound like you've been smoking weed all weekend.
Jules.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who are very confused. I saw friends of mine going, woo, on Facebook and on Twitter and everywhere else, basically incriminating themselves, saying, we're going to be smoking a lot of weed this weekend. And
a lot of people have incriminated themselves this weekend. They don't quite get it, but there's been so many clickbait titles, we don't really blame them. It has been a confusing weekend because to all intents and purposes, the personal possession and use of cannabis behind your front door in the privacy of your home has, to all intents and purposes, been legalized. Now, the police aren't going to prosecute, we don't think.
Well, we don't think, but they probably...
We don't think, yeah.
Yeah, you see, this is the problem. So let's just be clear. In the Western Cape High Court, it was decided by Judge Davis, right?
Mm-hmm. And a bench of three, unanimously, yeah.
That the personal possession and recreational use of marijuana within your own property, within the boundaries of your own property, is no longer an illegal activity.
Hmm.
It's not even just recreational. There's no reason for use. It is just to use the plant for whatever reason you like. And that, to us, is an absolute slam dunk. We love that. Because remember, we don't really make the distinction between medical and recreational. It's all one thing to us.
Right. Okay. So this is potentially very good news.
It's great news. It's not potentially. It's actually incredible news. They've got this judgment on the privacy laws in South Africa, which is what they were after. The two plaintiffs were after self-determination and the right to privacy, and it actually went on the privacy rule. And it's an absolutely brilliant rule, but there's a lot of grey areas at the moment because it has to be ratified by the Constitutional Court, and we're not sure yet whether the state will oppose and look for a retrial or an appeal in the Supreme Court in Bloemfontein. We don't think it's likely because a bench of three in the High Court is a very, very powerful judgment unanimously. And Judge Davis did point out on a number of occasions during the hearings that the state's defense was in complete disarray, which was an understatement.
All right, so does this mean, though, that we are on a runway here where we can take off and we can totally legalize the use of marijuana for whatever purpose people have for it? In other words, doesn't it still have to go to Parliament? Isn't there still a bill pending? Isn't there still some constitutional change that needs to take place?
Absolutely, Cliff. There's a long way to go, but let everybody, including me, have their high time this weekend because it has been quite a weekend. It has felt like to somebody who's used cannabis for 30 years, 25 years of which has been in the room I'm sitting in now, the room that I was busted in 7 years ago brutally by the cops. It's like a shroud has been lifted off everyone's psyche. Yes, the cops can still come, and yes, if you've got a whole bunch of plants in your back garden that don't really look like they're for personal use, you're going to be in deep dwang as usual. But if you are minding your own business, you're not pissing off your neighbors, and you're not being a complete doer, then I think you would the police will not prosecute because the police are after a conviction. The only good that the police can get out of anything to do with drugs is a conviction for a crime, and then they can notch it up on their slate of the war on drugs and the war on people. But they're not going to get a conviction because Judge Dennis Davis has said that if you're using it in the privacy of your own home, you're not harming yourself, you're not harming others, then there should be no crime and there certainly is no victim.
I think that sounds terrific.
It does. It's very close to the ruling that was in Mexico last year. The Mexico Supreme Court had four plaintiffs in front of them, and the plaintiffs said, we will not fully form as the human beings we want to be because you are denying us the use of cannabis. So we can't fully form as the people we want to be and think the way we want to think. So the judge actually agreed. And in Mexico, weed is legalized for just those four people. So, but that what that has done is just opened the floodgates to people all around the country to actually go to the court and do the same thing. They can't just say, right, it's completely legal. All of this has got to be tested in law. And you know, when you get a judgment like this in a high court, it has to be ratified by the constitutional court. And the constitution normally gives the state 2 years in which to fix the law that has now been deemed unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. So we've got a gray area, or maybe like a green gray area for the next couple of years. But we know that there are people in jail this weekend. We know there's been some busts. In fact, there's a very poignant letter on our Facebook page hours after the judgment of a guy that's getting hauled through the system in Randburg jail. And he's got such an affront about it because he feels that he's got human rights and he feels as if this judgment's just for him. But it hasn't filtered down to the cops, and nor will it for quite some time. So in the eyes of the judge and in the eyes of the cops, it's two completely different things at the moment, I think.
All right.
Well, is the judge then essentially saying that the law no longer cares about what you may or may not be doing in front of or with your potentially underage children? Because, you know, this is the favorite go-to counter-argument is, but what about the children? So you could be at home smoking a joint in front of your 10-year-old son, and that's completely okay?
You could be at home smoking cigarettes and having four double brandies with an unlocked bar behind there with the cigarettes lying all over the place. And what about the jar of SSRIs that you left on your bedside table or the other sleeping pills that you take because you're completely schmangled? It's the same argument, but people are trying to throw, you know, what about the children with the weed is exactly about the same about. What about the kids and all of the booze in the back of your cabinet at the stoop where you come and play at the weekends, you know? So it's all about parenting. And I've got to tell you a little story, you know. The kids that I've seen growing up with my peers in the last 25 years, the ones that are the most balanced and the most successful are the ones whose parents used the plant and taught them how to cope with the plant around them at an early age. And that is a true story.
All right. Well, listen, I'm happy for you. I'm happy for everybody, actually. You know that despite the fact that I'm not a user, I think that this stuff does constitute an invasion into the privacy of people's ability to decide what to put into their own body and what to do.
Thanks, Gareth.
What to do with substance. You know you've got my support, and congratulations on the victory.
Well, thank you very much. No congratulations to us. It's an incredible victory for two very, very brave people in Cape Town, Jeremy Acton and Ras Gareth Prince. Imagine what Gareth Prince thinks this weekend, because he was there in 2001, and they basically poked him in the eye and told him to go away. They just wouldn't have anything to do with it by a very small, close margin in the Constitutional Court. So he's been vindicated 17 years later. So he must be feeling pretty good this weekend.
And obviously, you guys have your Constitutional Court case coming up still.
Yeah, no, it's in 131 days or something and counting. It's screaming at us now. It's a huge thing. And as the doors of the barn have been opened by these two guys, we're just going to smash it all off the hinges now and get something really, really done, and something very positive and concrete. And once and for all, prove to the South African public at large what is the good and the harm of this plant. It will be thrashed out in the Pretoria High Court once and for all for everyone to listen to, so they can make their own minds up whether it's really, really bad for society because everyone's going to be driving stoned, or whether you're going to get schizophrenia, or whether there's going to be all sorts of strife and zombie apocalypse. Tune into the Pretoria High Court, and we're going to tell you definitively in law.
It has to be the Pretoria High Court. I like that a lot. All right,
it's always going to be a high court, yeah.
All right, thanks, man. They're very nice to speak to, Jules.
Bye, thanks a lot.
Bye. That's Jules.
Did he say hi or bye?
Bye.
Hi.
All right, so there we
go. Well, well, well.
All my stoner friends.
You know, I was laughing because over the weekend, and I went to like Bromfontein, I was in Maboneng, there was just this waft of weed everywhere you went.
I smelled some of that on Saturday as well.
Now, for me, the highlight was bumping into this guy, and we got into a discussion around it, and he says, well, for me, this ruling doesn't make a lot of sense. And I was like, well, why? He says, well, my land is in South Africa, so South Africa is my home. So anywhere I go in South Africa, I can smoke.
That's where you could get into a lot of trouble, because if you don't
fair
do
argument.
Hey, listen, it's
if,
a fair
if
point.
You do it in the privacy of your own home, then the privacy law upon which this finding was made kicks into action. If you do it outside, they'll still arrest you and take your ass to prison. Yeah. So push your luck.
Just have your dealer, you know, come deliver the goods in your lounge. Don't meet him at the corner of. They must start doing home deliveries now.
And so they can't take dealers to.
No, drug dealers can still be arrested.
Oh, oh yeah. No, dealers, please, that's going to be a long while before they can rest easy.
So realistically, where do they think people who smoke weed are getting the weed from?
They probably think that you grow it in a little pot in your own house.
Okay.
I'm very happy about this. I think
a message to you. That's it.
I really think that we should legalize the whole damn lot. Every kind of drug, let people just get on with it. It's enough already. It's childish and silly. And if people are going to use the stuff, they're going to use the stuff. There's no law that can stop them.
Yep, but if we legalize it, then there's tourism. Then there's all kinds of employment opportunities.
And tax.
Yeah, you can tax this stuff. Plus, for people who want this, I mean, you know, there are people who have very, very horrible lives, and they want drugs because it makes them feel better. You don't tell people who are obese, oh, we're gonna arrest you the next time we see you in the McDonald's drive-through. Do you? You don't tell those people who say they found Jesus and Jesus helped them give up all the drugs. You say, well, I'm sorry, if you bring up this Jesus thing one more time, we're gonna arrest you. It's the same. It's an addiction. It's all the same. So let's be consistent. Some people use food as a coping mechanism. Some people use religion as a coping mechanism. Some people use weed as a coping mechanism. Let them have their coping mechanism. Right?
Just let them be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why anyone would have a problem with this. And if you've got children who are stoners and they've become a disaster in your house, in your society, then that's because you're a bad parent, not because of the weed.
Oh, yeah.
Legalization of weed has got absolutely nothing to do with your fucked up child. Really.
Man.
I know plenty of sensible adults who do this from time to time, and it does not affect anyone else. Zero people are affected. Some people drink to make their lives better. You don't see people driving around from party to party, finding the drunkest person and putting them in the van. It's not how it works. So we shouldn't be doing this either. It's ridiculous. It's silly. You should be able to do... If Mabali wants to eat a kilogram of steak every night, no one's going to go into her house and say, I'm sorry, we're going to stop you from hurting yourself.
Ooh.
Get out of her house. If Sia wants to drink... hairspray. That's his problem. If he dies in 3 days' time from the hairspray, he's chosen his thing.
And he's enjoyed it until his death. He's enjoyed himself.
If you want to inject yourself with steroids, go for it. If you want to smoke weed, go for it. If you want to snort lines off of your sushi table girlfriend, do it. Knock yourself out. No one else is getting hurt from any of this. It would be silly and childish and stupid for you to stand in the way of people doing what they're going to do anyway. Right?
Yep.
Do
it's
it.
Always the case.
And I know the last people you want deciding what you should and shouldn't do is government. Because that's worked so well up to now. You know? When it comes to what I am and am not allowed to do. government. All right, what else do we need to know? I can't believe I brought up the weed story. I thought my buddy would be all over that.
I completely forgot about the weed story.
Yeah. I totally all forgot.
There is at least one person in South Africa this morning who is probably not as fazed by, you know, news about politicians or any of that. He is recovering from a good hangover, one where he won a cool 10 million rand at the slot machine.
Wow.
This is the biggest ever jackpot payout on the slots across the Sun International Group in South Africa, according to Grand West Casino in Cape Town, which is where the win happened. The man has been identified as Klaus Barnard from Barrow. Barnard said he was attending a function with his wife at the casino when he tried his luck on the siren slot machine. He said, "I was sitting there in shock. And then I phoned my wife, who was also playing on the floor. I knew you could win a million rand in a casino, but I never expected to win 10 million rand."
I hate stories like this. I'll tell you why. Because it makes people think that this happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially in this story, because this is not the first time that Barnard has had quite a big win. Oh. In July last year, he won 700,000 rand also at Grand West.
But how much is the tax on that?
Well, he got a payout of 330,000 rand from the 700,000 rand win. So that's just under half that he lost. Just over half the money that he lost. So 10 million, like close to 5 million rand he'll be getting. Or just over 5 million rand after the, you know, after SARS, get their grubby paws in
that's
there.
That's ridiculous. This is a win.
Let him be.
I know. Why does SARS get to just come in and just take
the lotto?
Because they've got to pay for all the Gupta companies that we're going to be bringing on board. What are you, insane? Of course it's going to. No, SARS need that money.
Wow. Well, yeah. So he wins 700,000 and he wins...
July last year, he won 700,000 and then now, over the weekend, he won 10 million rand. And Grand West Casino says that this is Barnard's biggest windfall in his 16 years of gaming. So he's a regular there.
Okay.
He's all a regular.
Yeah, and you better believe he's lost about 10 million rand in any case. So, in other words,
you always break even the best.
You know what? They saw him sitting at that machine and the guys from Grand West were like, "Oh, that poor bastard. He's probably on the bones of his ass. He's come in here every night for the last 7 years. 16 years.
Yeah, 16.
16 years. Let him win. Otherwise, he'll stop coming.
But and they've released his name as well?
Yeah, and
he must have been okay with that happening.
And you watch. They'll get that 10 million back from him in the next 5 years.
Oh, I need to become his friend, though.
No, you don't.
No, you don't, see.
Oh, never.
You'll be spending your whole day in a casino that smells of smoke, putting dirty, filthy money into a dirty, filthy machine and pressing a button going clink, clink, clink.
Yeah, and those funny noises and all the bright colors.
But what about the money, y'all?
Stop this. This is not your money, Sia. You're like...
It will be we become friends.
You're like those women who think that they have all the rights to a rich man's wealth. No, you don't, honey. That's not your money.
But okay,
your money, honey.
Since that plan doesn't work... So the recent list of the 10 highest paying jobs in South Africa has just been released.
Oh, let's look at that, yeah?
So maybe I should acquaint myself with people who are in this list, rather. So number 10 going up to 1. Number 10 on the list, air traffic controllers.
Yep. It's a stressful, hardcore job. Mm-hmm. I would have to be paid millions. Think about it, Sia. You're pushing tin the whole time. You have to make sure that planes don't crash into each other.
Yeah.
It's a stressful, stressful job. You can't be distracted by, I just got a WhatsApp.
Yeah, true.
Jet planes crash into each other. You can't do that.
So already air traffic controllers earn about 450,000 rand. And we don't know whether this is per annum or per month, but like we'll just put together somehow that I think it's per annum here. But if it's per month, then yo, sign me up to that list too. Number 9, software engineers. 8, lawyers. 7, petroleum engineers, specifically petroleum. Oh. Number 6, IT managers with the highest pay around 780,000 rands. Number 5, chartered accountants. Number 4, management consultants. Number 3, pilots with about 1 million rand. Score. Yep. Bag myself one of those. Number 2, actuaries. And number 1, any sort of medical specialist with about a six-figure a six-figure salary, which is round about, on average in South Africa, 4,760,000 rands.
Wow.
Medical specialist.
Come on, folks.
That's very good money.
Yeah, Mabal is already looking into the horizon.
No, I'm not.
Just medical specialist. Where do they hang out? Like, that's where I need to be.
So it wouldn't be my money, so yeah.
See, has got a real problem understanding this idea of property.
No, I don't understand that concept, you know.
Yes, he doesn't really, he doesn't care. He's got the right idea of money. He's just going to use it.
It's not a me situation. It's going to
be a processing thing.
If you don't understand the value of someone else's property and that it is theirs, then you won't understand the value of it when it's yours. So if you think someone's money is an important thing about them, which it is.
Yes.
Then when you have money, if you have money one day, that's how people will think of you.
My only problem is, well, the problem in this situation, which I'm here to help solve, is that these people are stuck working. You know, this medical specialist is busy on call all the time. His money's just sitting in the bank or in investments. I'm saying, treat me as one of your portfolios. I'll live life for you.
You can be his ass manager.
That's it, manager.
There we go. I'll experience what it's like to share a bottle of champagne with Lewis Hamilton in Monaco, you know.
Okay. Yeah. How kind of you.
Exactly. I'll take one for the
team. That's very sweet of you, Sia.
Thank you. But there we go. Ten highest paying jobs in South Africa.
Okay. Very good. I wouldn't want any of those jobs, just by the way, because even if they do pay well, you have to, if you're an actuary. I mean, you're working in an insurance company. You're working out the odds of something terrible happening. You know, whether it's an accident, whether it's a person, their house burning down. You have to figure out that stuff. That's not fun. That's really hard work.
It is that cliche, though, with great power comes great responsibility. None of these things you can just sign off at the end of the day and breathe easy. It's just stressful as well.
So this friend of mine, it's not even a friend of mine, but someone who listens to us, says, went to my grandma's house some time ago and went into the backyard, and this is what I found, a huge big tree of weed. So now I visit her all the time to clean up the garden. His grandma had no idea. It looks like bamboo, actually, the way that these pictures seem. So he goes in there and he cleans up the weed for her.
Good grandson.
Craig here. He says, good morning. I hope you're wearing black in support. How about some AC/DC? So Friday, are we protesting or what? I don't know, Craig. We're still kind of figuring that out.
Yeah, let's do it.
Make drugs so freely available and cheap that no one would want to produce drugs for resale, hence eradicating the drug supply. Yeah, you got to cut out those evil kingpins. Someone sent me a whole lot of pictures of stuff from Douglas Adams. Thank you for that, but I don't have time to read it now. Hi, team. I just loved your chat last week about the ridiculous names. Wondered if you'd ever heard of two books written by Douglas Adams and John Lloyd, hence these pictures. One is The Meaning of Lif, and the second is The Deeper Meaning of Lif. Picture coming to forward the first of the book. It is hilarious. Okay, I'll take a look at that a bit later on. Thank you for those. And I'm so glad Dacha was legalized. Now South Africans can get high and puff, puff, our Zuma troubles away.
All right.
You see, the people who've been wanting to get high have been getting high.
They've been getting high anyway.
Regardless.
Yeah.
And they shall.
Yeah, are we done?
Are we? I mean, are we talking to Rich Mulholland?
Are we going to talk to Rich Mulholland? Yeah. You going to get him on Skype? All right, thank you. I just need to know what's happening over there.
Have we got like a minute before we do that?
Yeah, we do. Go ahead.
So, you know Fast and Furious, Gareth, your favorite movie franchise?
Yeah,
did you see there was a whole pop-up channel,
girl,
dedicated to all 700 million Fast and Furious movies. Yeah,
I'm like, what?
I saw that over the weekend, and I was like, oh, okay,
like,
so this is a thing.
24 hours
now.
Of that.
They did it with James Bond. It seems like it's going to become a regular thing.
Well, some very smart insurance company has worked out the damage caused in those seven movies. this is smart. Oh, okay. So that's how you get your brand out there.
See, once again, we say all of these like professors as well who work on surveys. What are you actually doing? Like, someone is trying to claim from that company, and they're facing an uphill battle because their company is too busy trying to work out how much
Fast and Furious smart marketing. So
needed to work.
Fast and Furious, all seven movies.
How much?
A staggering $514 million in insurance claims would have been processed.
$514 million.
Yeah, so $514,364,366.
What a waste of money.
That would be the most instructive character?
Vin Diesel.
No, he's only caused $68,970,758 of damage.
Oh, well, probably the one who died.
Paul Walker.
No, he only caused $16,286,479 of damage.
But I don't know any other characters outside of those
Tyrese
two.
Tyrese Gibson's character.
Guys, you got to think the villains cause more damage, right? They're always blowing stuff up. Who are the villains?
Okay. The Rock.
Jason Statham. No, the Rock's not a villain. Jason Statham has caused $182,350,445 of damage in the Fast and Furious movies. When you consider it's quite something, seeing as he wasn't in many.
Now, is it really Jason Statham that's caused this damage, or was it the stunt driver?
Well, look, I don't think a lot of the damage was actually caused, Mabs.
No, I mean, I understand how we're speaking. I'm just saying, like, because, I mean, do a lot of these guys drive these cars themselves, or do they get experts?
I think when it comes to driving, there's a lot at stake, so it's never the actors. Yeah. I mean, like, they'll do their own fight scenes, perhaps, and do a jump here and there, but when it comes to, like, driving cars and fire and stuff.
Yeah.
So out of all those millions, $20 million of damage was in the first five movies.
Gee.
So you work that out. The next two movies combined for more than $490 million worth of damage. If they were to get insurance claims. Smart.
Wow.
169 regular cars damaged, 142 regular cars destroyed, 32 special vehicles destroyed, 53 buildings damaged, 31 buildings destroyed. So if they keep making these movies, we'll be in an apocalypse in no time whatsoever.
Well, they are. There's a new one coming out with Charlize Theron.
Fast and Furious Apocalypse version. Fast and Furious, like, Syria. It just blow the whole place up.
Oh, my goodness.
Is Charlize Theron really going to be in the next one?
Yeah, the eighth one.
Oh, yeah, Charlize Theron. What movie was she in over the weekend that I saw? Hancock. I finally watched Hancock. It was on. I was just lying in front of the TV.
You've never watched it before?
No, never watched it.
Hey, ho, and Will Smith, Nick.
What a great movie, because Will Smith is drunk most of the movie.
Yes.
And then Charlize Theron ends up being like a super hero as well.
Yeah.
But she's been hiding it.
Married to that, what's his name? That average-looking actor guy.
Sean Penn.
No.
Mm-mm.
Jason
Derulo.
Bateman.
Jason Bateman, thank you. Yeah. I always just, in my head, he'd make just like an average neighbor.
But I wouldn't mind having Will Smith as Hancock as a neighbor.
Before he sobered up? Or
I don't mind.
Yeah.
Because he was quite a meanie when he was drinking.
Quite destructive. He was quite destructive.
Right. I like that.
When we come back, we'll get to Rich Mulholland. Your calls on Cliff Central, one word, on Skype if you want to WhatsApp us, 0797482090. Okay, get into it. And this is especially for Mubs this morning.
Ooh. Yeah.
Touch my bunnies. Touch my bunny. Are we having any luck with Rich? What's happening there? I need to know. Bring it on. Hey, Lucas, you're wearing black today. Look at you. Did you heed the call?
No, actually, this was the only iron clothes.
All right, what's the story with Rich?
The number that you've dialed is currently unavailable, so we're just checking.
For God's sake.
Now we're double checking that side.
Okay, here's something from Israel. Says, thanks for clearing up the weed story. I think one big issue with the cops and weed, from my experience, is that the cops never arrest the dealers. It's always a lot more profitable for them to arrest the buyer. They know where the guys are selling, wait for the customers, they follow them, and arrest a big handful. The way they can cash in on some good bail money that way. There are many more buyers than there are sellers. Oh, and about the March thing, I think you guys play a more important role by broadcasting the show and keeping us informed than going out to March. I'd rather let your audience go out and do that, and you tell us what's happening. Happy Monday, Israel. Yeah, there we go. Some sensible thoughts. Is Lucas rabbit farming, or is he creating the first podcast? People want to know. All right. Let me know as soon as you got Rich over there. We want to talk to him. A quick reality check for this morning. Now, everybody knows who Fatima Meer was. She, of course, was a political activist, an academic and writer. And we're going to be speaking to her daughter just now about her incredible life. So stick around for that. It's going to make our Monday that much more interesting today. And particularly in the light of all of the struggle stalwart news of the last few weeks, I think it's probably something everybody wants to know a little bit about.
Mm.
What's up, Lucas?
Just two updates.
No, yeah, two updates. All right, go.
Can we please try him from your phone?
All right.
Sorry about that. Then? And the other good news.
Yes.
That came on April Fool is that Rick and Morty season 3 is out.
Yes.
What? Yep.
Rick and Morty is back.
It's back, season 3.
Good.
This is not April Fool.
Okay, Rick and Morty, that's Ben's favorite show.
That is just so incredible.
Sorry.
It's a cartoon. Have you watched it yet? Do you know what show?
No, I was with you guys because I thought we were talking about some Ricky Martin updates.
Oh, Ricky Martin.
I heard Ricky Martin initially. No.
Nobody's spoken about Ricky Martin in years.
Yeah, you got to get over that, Nasir. Yeah? It's been a while.
Okay, talk to me about this series.
Let me see if we can get Mulholland on here quickly. Rich Mulholland.
Why are you so interested in Ricky
Martin? No,
Ricky
one is
Martin? What?
No, but why are you so interested in him?
Because he just got engaged and has a Vegas show? Come on, folks. No one's here? Okay. Yeah.
Hello, Rich Mulholland. How are you?
Good, dude. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Where in the world are you today?
I'm down in Cape Town. It's a kid's school holidays.
All right. Very good. So I thought we'd just catch up with you quickly, and we'll do a sort of condensed version of the reality check for this morning. First of all, do you have a good weekend?
I did indeed.
Excellent. Are there a lot of people smoking weed in Cape Town after that High Court decision?
You know, you'd expect that we'd have cars going everywhere, that we'd have things like this. I am feeling particularly good every time I walk outside, so I can only imagine something like that's happening.
It's probably in the air already. There's probably that cloud that's usually over the mountain. It's actually weed smoke for the last couple
of
years.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Although I say that, I mean, I don't smoke weed in 20 years, but I'm all for the practice.
By the way, can you just fill us in? Is the water situation any better? Anthea says that she was there this morning, and most people aren't even talking about it, and they did get some rain over the evening. But are people concerned about running out of water in Cape Town?
Absolutely. Every one of our showers has buckets in it that we're catching. Yeah. I mean, and everyone should be concerned. It's been quite crazy. Like when we were driving past on the way into town, just every one of the dams you drive past looks like it's running on empty. So you get a real sense of how the reservoirs would look. Hmm. And people should be shooting themselves. It's a real problem.
All right. So what's on your mind this morning? What have you been thinking about all weekend?
Well, I tell you what I have been thinking about is what everyone else has been thinking about. And that is this kind of protest mass action problem.
Okay.
And my worry is that we've been thinking about doing something, but we've not been thinking about what we want to achieve. And I know it seems like it's pretty obvious, but I don't think it is at all. I think when you're going to do something and you're going to protest for something specific, you want to have very, very detailed actions of what you're hoping to get out of it and play. And I'm worried that we're not doing that. I'm also worried that we've been divided, that there's so many different initiatives going off nowadays or at the moment that I'm not sure which one I'm supposed to take part in.
Now, I remember you talking about this before. You said that basically in game theory, you have to know what the victory conditions are. Is that what you're referring to?
I guess to some degree I'm referring to the victory condition. In this case, I guess it's about the fact that there is, you know, are we wearing black clothes today or are we marching on Friday? And if we are, what are we asking for? What is the protest for? Now, I do understand the principle that if we can get people on board just going out there and showing dissatisfaction, that's a start. If we can start building some sort of groundswell. In Leipzig in Germany, that's how they got the Berlin Wall done. They started by protesting to the streets and then went on and on and on and on. It got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the people eventually just ripped down the wall. But they had a very, very clear intent. And I'm worried that we lack that at the moment.
Now, do you have any ideas? Because we're grappling with the idea of on Friday whether or not we should be protesting because it seems the whole country is going to grind to a standstill. Do we join these protests? Do we carry on doing what we're doing? We certainly don't want to be blocking the highways and stupid stuff like that. But what would you do on Friday if you really felt passionately that you needed to be heard by the government?
So I do feel passionately that we need to be heard by the government. I certainly am not indifferent in any way. I'm perhaps somewhat cynical as to the approach. And I think that this idea of just, hey, guys, let's just take the day off. I was chatting to a friend yesterday, and, you know, we have to cut off the – if everybody all of a sudden didn't pay tax for a couple of months, if all businesses stopped paying government, if we actually, you know, closed the taps, that would be something worthwhile. But if we're just taking a day off work, that will affect the entrepreneurial sector, it'll affect businesses, it'll be an inconvenience. I mean, will people be happy if airline staff strike on Friday – or not strike, but you know what I mean, if they march on Friday – people be happy when they go to the restaurant, so they want to go out to an evening and the restaurants are all closed because of it. Like, and if they will, that's fantastic. But I have a feeling that's not necessarily the case. And I'm genuinely at a loss. I'm not 100% sure what we should be pushing for and what we should be doing in terms of making a big difference. But I do feel that our efforts should be together. And we should maybe take a breather and come up with something that is smart and will actually strike at the heart. The other conversation we're having yesterday, and I hate to say this, but the ANC itself didn't topple apartheid. It required Nkonto Wesizwe to do some of the dirty work.
There were also international sanctions. There were people, donors and funders from Scandinavia. There were people here in this country who weren't even ANC. There were PAC members that were ZAPO members, that were members of other political parties, also played their role in the struggle. It certainly wasn't just the ANC.
No, and I think there's a very good point there. Have we successfully rallied international people to try and help us in the cause and to get things done? And I'm not convinced that we have. So it's a very real worry. And because I didn't fully expect you, I didn't know I was going to be on today. I didn't probably prepare as well as I could have, but I certainly want to give it some thought and come back to you with because I really have been concerned a lot, and I do want to try to figure out something that I can do.
Well, I mean, any help you can give us, because we also sat here and threw it around for a while this morning. It seems to me that there isn't a leader, there isn't someone who's in charge of this whole thing who can set the agenda. It seems to just be that people are pissed off, they're dissatisfied, they want to see change, but they're not sure how to bring it about.
Do you think perhaps there's something to be said for the fact that because everybody's communicating on social media, no one's actually communicating? Do you not think there needs to be a conclave where a group of smart individuals get together? You know, the biggest impact we saw last year was when business actually went and sat down with the president and said, hey, man, we're not happy with this. The CEOs of the top companies went and sat down. Do we not need some sort of big meeting of, you know, rather than just assuming that we're talking because we've shared stuff with each other on social media?
I think that's a very good point. Perhaps that meeting is what we should do on Friday.
Yeah. And you see, now there for me, instead of just being a march, if there was a meeting and there was a conversation going around, that could well be the case. But I think there needs to be something more than just taking the day off.
Okay.
I think that in and of itself is not enough because it lacks intent. We know that we would like to have Zuma fall and a change and all of these things, but there's no intent into how we're going to make that happen. And I believe that's a flaw in our thinking.
All right, so you're going
to
work.
But I'm happy to support the country in whichever way. So I will back and support in whichever way I can that I feel that will add the most value, but provided there's a smart end.
All right, you're going to start formulating a plan then. We've just we deputized you to do it, whether you like it or not. All right, you're
brilliant.
You're in charge.
I will be back.
Thanks so much.
Okay, cheers, dude. Have a fantastic week. Bye.
There we go. Rich Mulholland, reality check for this morning. And coming up in a moment or two, some very exciting stuff that I've actually been looking forward to speaking to Shamim Mir for a while now, the daughter of Fatima Mir, about her mother's life. At the age of 17, Fatima Mir threw herself into resisting racism, her first public act of defiance in a long and pioneering political life. Now, we're obviously talking about what we should be doing in South Africa. Now, if you're an activist, it's clear that the regime has changed, but this regime has now created its own problems, and we need to, in some way, learn from her life. There's a beautiful book that's been written, an intimate memoir. Fatima Mir shares her story of growing up and of love, joy, longing, and loss. And she open-heartedly reflects on her regrets as well as her triumphs and an enchanting tale emerges of a rebellious revolutionary woman who never shied away from the truth. Her daughter here this morning to talk to us about her incredible life. That's coming up in just a few minutes' time. Don't go anywhere. Exciting stuff today on cliffcentral.com. Right, Mubs?
That's right.
Cliffcentral.com.